Hello, everyone, and welcome to Sports Community Radio. My name is Jonah Vella, and along with my co-host, Steve Pallas, we'll be talking all the latest in the world of grassroots sport. G'day, Steve. A big welcome to you, mate.
G'day, Joe. It's great to be here.
So we've got an absolute fantastic show today lined up. We're going to be talking to Belinda Watson, the director of rafflelink.com.au, and she's put together a really fantastic product to help clubs with their raffles. We're also going to be doing our famous top nine, which today is all about how to run an event planning committee. So that's going to be really interesting for the clubs out there. But before we do all that, Steve, we're going to be talking a little bit about the latest grants that have come out. But before I launch into that, I want you, if you can, to get us up to speed on what's been happening at Sports Community HQ.
Sports Community HQ, Joe. As per normal, it's been a very big week at Sports Community. We've started the first of four training sessions with the Ultimate Frisbee. The ladies from the different Ultimate Frisbee clubs in the Victorian universities, which is pretty cool. Big milestone this week also, Joe. We have finished the first draft of our first book on communication strategies, including social media for sports clubs, or achieving goals for sports clubs using communication and social media. Need to work on the topic, on the heading, but that's really, really, really exciting to get that, the first cut done. There's a lot of work to go, and it'll form
it's very exciting.
Yeah, it'll form the basis of our first online training, which will be on social media as well for clubs and creating communication strategies that help clubs achieve goals. So
it's a real milestone for the business, isn't it? It's a real launch into this digital content area, e-books, online courses. It's really fantastic, fantastic news. So looking forward to those products being published. I do love the motto of the Ultimate Frisbee Group, which is stop playing with your balls.
Well, it's not the motto. It's a motto that they used in one of their posters for
very effectively. O Week.
So fantastic from Ultimate. We very much enjoyed it, and they're looking forward to the next 3 weeks.
All right, now let's talk about some grants. The first grant I want to talk about is the Significant Sporting Events Program grant, which appears on our website. Of course, if you've missed this, the website is www.sportscommunity.com.au, Significant Sporting Events Program Grant. It's for up to $20,000 in assistance, or event development grants of up to $300,000. It's for significant sporting events programs helping sporting community event organisations deliver significant sporting events in Victoria. And its open dates are from the 28th of February. So check that one out. The next one is the Victorian Sporting Uniforms Program Grant. And this is for $1,000 to assist in the purchase of sports uniforms. And that's also on our website. So you can check out the details there, the eligibility details at www.sportscommunity.com.au. And there'd be a lot of folks out there, I'd imagine, who and clubs that could do with some extra money to assist in their teams being decked out appropriately. The other grant that's come up in the last couple of days is a football or soccer related grant. It's from IGA. It's an IGA Future Soccer Stars, and it's for up to $150,000, which is split up into $10,000 installments. So it's a significant. It's a significant amount of money available to local soccer clubs, and you can find out more about that grant as well on our website at www.sportscommunity.com.au. You're listening to Sports Community Radio with your hosts, Jonah Vella and Steve Pallas. If you've missed a couple of our episodes, why not visit our website at www.sportscommunity.com.au, and there you'll find all our previous podcasts that you can download. And while you're there, give us a review so you can help spread the news about Sports Community and its services to the grassroots sports clubs. Okay, as mentioned at the top of the show, we've got a very special guest with us today. Her name is Belinda Watson, and she's the director of a fantastic company called RaffleLink. How are you, Belinda?
I'm well, thank you. Thank you for having me.
It's an absolute pleasure. Now, I wonder if you could just start by letting us know what RaffleLink is and how it started.
Okay. Well, the idea evolved from when I attended my first PNC meeting at my daughter's school.
Yep.
I proposed a succession of raffles, and I was told by the committee there that it was all too difficult and not worth the effort. So I came home that evening, and I thought there's got to be a better way. And that very night, we came up with the concept of online raffles. So we went about developing custom design software to host online raffles for non-profit organisations. And our clients range from community clubs, school PNCs, charities, and, of course, sports clubs.
Wow. So we're talking, a lot of clubs out there will be listening to this, and your typical raffle is quite disorganised. Typically, when we're visiting clubs out there, you know, people are out there giving out tickets. They can't remember what money's come in. They've got they haven't got systems in place. It's all done on a very ad hoc basis. So you've developed this program that kind of puts all those elements together in one central spot on the web. Is that right?
Yeah, that's correct. Essentially, it's a traditional raffle in every sense, but it's run online, and RaffleLink is the manager of the raffle. We host and manage it, so that element that makes a raffle quite time-consuming and a lot of effort is removed, so the client or the club can just concentrate on promoting the raffle.
Wow. So I wonder if you could just walk us through the process. So a club decides that they need to hold a raffle and they want your custom-based software to do it. What process do they need to go through? They need to become a member? Just give us a feel of the...
Well, essentially, it's not a membership. It's a paper raffle event. So the client would visit our website. There's details on some preliminary investigating that they need to do in terms of government regulations that they may need to adhere to. But essentially, in most states, a club can run a raffle with prizes under $5,000 without needing any kind of license. So it's fairly simplistic from that point of view. Once they've procured some prizes, they would then fill in an application form. And it's a highly automated process. So the application form and anything that is involved with the process is via email back and forth. So once filling in an application form, we would then send them an agreement for us to conduct the raffle on their behalf.
Right.
Then if required by the government, and every state government has different regulations, we would then submit any government paperwork that they require.
Okay. So they don't need to go through that process.
If they do require a license, which is, I think, only in two states that you would require a license from the onset, they would have to arrange that themselves before the raffle the application is even filled in.
Right.
So once that is done and the application is filled in and we have the authority from the government to go ahead if that is necessary in their particular state, then we would contact them. A web page would be established from the application form that they've completed. So all that information would dump into a web template. They would add their prizes, their prize pictures, and their logo for their club. And then the raffle would go live on their elected start date.
Wow. So let me get this straight for everybody out there, because this is a fantastic offering for sports clubs. I can already see a lot of advantages here. it means that you're going to have pretty much your own website where you can run a raffle from, and it's all coordinated from your end. So the users or the clients will get, they would get also, they'd probably get some kind of client panel as well that they can make changes and do and view who's bought tickets and those kind of things. Is that correct?
Yes, that's correct. So once the raffle's live, they can log into their client panel and they can look at the progress of the raffle, the ticket sales and any tickets that are remaining. So they can, perhaps they'll have the inside knowledge of where they are within their time frame of the raffle and whether they need to do some additional promotion. But essentially all the behind the scenes is run by us. So on that actual raffle page, there's a buying facility. Ticket buyers log in, they purchase tickets, they're sent an automated receipt to their email address. We collect the money on behalf of the client, so they're not having to worry about money collecting. And at the end of the raffle, the client is prompted to draw the raffle, and they simply go into their client admin panel. They click on a button, and it draws the raffle, and if they've got first, second, and third prizes, that's all drawn sequentially, and the winners are notified by email. So it is highly automated. It does take a lot of effort out of running a raffle.
Wow, that's fantastic. Now, a lot of folks out there would want to know where. So, in terms of the ticket prices, do you take a cut, or do you take a cut from payment, credit card payment? How is that worked out?
Okay, so the client nominates their ticket pricing, and they can either have a single price or they can have, say, a book of tickets for a reduced price to encourage more sales. At the end of the raffle, we take a percentage of the gross proceeds. So we're collecting the money on behalf of the client, and then we would forward them the gross proceeds less our percentage.
Right. So if they've got a raffle that involves 100 tickets at $2, is there a minimum ticket price? I should ask first.
There is a minimum ticket price. To make it viable, we would only look at $2 tickets and over.
Right.
And because with the sale of tickets, there is, we utilise a selling platform.
Right.
A secure payment platform, rather. And so we're obviously paying a fee for that facility, and we pass on a portion of that fee to that facility.
Right.
So with the cost for service, there is a percentage of the gross proceeds, and with the ticket sales, there's a 15-cent per ticket sale.
Right.
Fee.
Right. So if we've got 100 tickets at $2 each, and they're all sold to what's that, $200, then you take a percentage of that, and also a 15-cent fee for those tickets that were sold along the way. Is that right?
Yes, that's right. So I guess it's in the interest. Firstly, I guess the best case scenario is to go for a higher price ticket, so $2, $5, and yep. Then also encourage people to buy maybe three tickets for $12 or something to that effect.
Right.
So that's only one lot of 15 cents rather than
three lots. Yeah.
So
yeah.
In that respect, you're retaining the greatest amount of profit for the club. Yeah.
Sure. Now that we've set it all up, I want to talk a little bit about how we market and promote the raffle. And do you have, as part of your facility, the ability to promote on Facebook and newsletters and those kind of things?
Yes, both the raffle page and also the ticket receipt that the ticket receiver, the ticket buyer receives, has integrated social media links. So they can for example, on the raffle page, you can go on and send that to a friend and say, look at this great page. You know, do you want to buy a ticket in our raffle? Or the ticket buyer can actually forward on the raffle page and say, I've just bought tickets in this. It's a great prize. What do you think? And in that way, they're sharing the raffle through social media.
I think that's fantastic. That's a great addition to the product suite to allow clubs out there to promote, not only to host it but to promote it through social media. Is there? Do you recommend any other ways that clubs can promote their raffle?
Well, they can go down the traditional pathways, and I would certainly encourage that because we're doing the behind the scenes work, but the club is responsible for the promotion, and the more they do, obviously, the more proceeds they'll receive. So what we provide with the raffle page is a PDF of the raffle page that the clubs can take and have printed into flyers that they can distribute.
Wow, okay.
They can make posters. They can do signage on their fence or in prominent places within their community. So we're still looking at traditional means of promotion. They can add the raffle URL to their website, their newsletter, any emails that the club might send out.
Yep.
So through all those means, they're able to reach the greatest audience. And, of course, the social media component allows them to reach beyond their local community to friends and family of members that don't even live in the same town.
Wow. Mm. Oh, that's fantastic. So I wonder if you can give us, just from your experience and from the clients that you've had on board so far, what have you seen that's led to successful raffle programs for clubs, and what are the types of things to avoid?
Okay. Well, with the online raffle, it's the greatest fundraising. You can reach the greatest fundraising audience, and it's the easiest possible way to go about that. I'm at a loss.
No, that's okay. I'd imagine that the ones that are doing it really well are using it extensively through their social media channels.
Yes. It is imperative that you do that. And at the moment, you probably would have heard of crowdfunding, which charities use.
Yep.
And that's basically online donation, and that's promoted through social media. So, and that is happening very successfully for charities. And so people are quite comfortable with giving online. So they're not adverse to giving through this method, and they're quite, it's become socially acceptable.
Yeah,
that,
yeah.
That you receive requests to make donations or payments online, and people are
absolutely
quite, yeah, comfortable with that.
Well, let's just summarise this and talk through some of the advantages again, because I'm sure that there's a lot of people out there interested. Basically, we're talking here to Belinda Watson, who is the director of a organisation called RaffleLink, and that's www.rafflelink.com.au. Is that right, Belinda?
That's right.
Yep. And what RaffleLink is for the clubs out there is it's an online ticketing raffle ticket system. So rather than, you know, getting your cheap raffle tickets and stubs from the $2 shop and trying to go out there and run a raffle and losing your stubs and not looking after your money properly. And And by the way, there's nothing wrong with that. There are people who are doing that and doing it successfully. But for the majority of us, that can be a little bit painful. This is a product that allows you to do all of that online. So let's talk about some of the most basic advantages of your product. You give the sports clubs out there a raffle link page where they can put pictures of their prizes, run their raffle, and they can monitor how many tickets have been sold and how much money they're getting in the door. Is that right?
That's right. So essentially, once the page is established, they don't have to do anything but promote that raffle. There's no door-to-door selling, there's no printing of tickets, there's no collecting and collating tickets and money. That's all left up to us, and we just ask them to promote their page the best way they can. Essentially, clubs these days, associations have volunteers that are between the ages of 35 and 44. They're more than likely, they've got children, they're working full-time, they just don't have the time to do the hard slog. So we're doing it on their behalf.
Yeah, that's great.
Excuse me, Belinda, it's Steve Pallas here. How are you going?
Yeah, how are you?
Good, thanks. I thought I'd better join the interview. Look like I'm actually earning some money for the day. I'm just listening intently to what you're saying about RaffleLink, and I think it's an amazingly powerful system that you've set up for sports clubs for two reasons that appeal to me. And I know that when Joe was talking about costs, that's often a deterrent for clubs, but the ability to be able to double and triple and quadruple and the audience that you're selling tickets to should by far and away offset any costs that are associated with using RaffleLink, which is fantastic. But the other one that kind of, I'm not sure how you use it or how the clubs use it, is when you're purchasing tickets. I was just flicking through the site as you're talking, and you're collecting a lot of information from the ticket buyers. So like first name or their names, their email addresses, their phone numbers, that sort of thing. Does the club receive that information?
They do receive that information. At the end of the raffle, they receive a sales report, and it has all that information on there. And they're essentially obligated to have that report.
Yes.
So that if a government body wants to query anything, they have that at hand. The facility, the website, will have an addition shortly that will give ticket buyers authority to either give permission to be contacted in future by those clubs.
Yep.
So they can either check that on or off, and so the club knows specifically who they're entitled to contact, and that is a privacy issue.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, that's an amazing way that clubs can very quickly build their databases to communicate to the broader community, which is just a fantastic benefit.
Yeah,
Belinda, when clubs apply to have a raffle with RaffleLink, is there a waiting time, or can they just basically apply to have it done and then it's done straight away?
From the time they fill in the application form, there is a 6-week lead period. And the reasoning for this is because we're dealing with states all around Australia, every state government body has different regulations, and some require at least 28 days lead to do documentation. So we've put in that 6-week lead time to allow for this to be done. And so essentially a club in that time, they need to have their prizes ready to go. And as soon as the start date eventuates, the raffle goes live. But there is that 6-week period required.
Sure. And I just wonder if we could
chat a little bit more about the government regulations. I'm sure a lot of people out there would want a little bit of clarity on that. So each state has their own gambling and raffle ticket type governing regulations. And you said before that generally if the prize is under $5,000, you should be okay.
That's right. Okay. So most states, except the ACT and WA, you're needing a permit with those states. But other states, you can have prizes up to $5,000 and not require a license or a permit to proceed.
Great. Now, we talked about a lot. We talked a lot about the things we should do to make the raffle ticket campaign successful. What are some of the don'ts in your experience?
Sorry, what?
What are some of the don't do's, like, in your experience? Like, would having... are there certain prizes that clubs should stay away from? Do some prizes attract more visitors than others? Is there anything that you would suggest, you know, to steer right away from when clubs are setting up a campaign?
Okay. With certain... states, there are prizes that are prohibited, and you would have to look at the regulations of the individual states. Some states have restrictions on the amount of cash money that can be given as a prize.
Right.
Other prizes that are prohibited are things like perhaps alcohol or cosmetic surgery and some unusual items like that. When selecting a prize, you really have to take a look at your audience and look at what would mean the most to them. So, for example, on the website, I think I mentioned that, you know, if you're a club in an isolated or regional area, perhaps a seaside holiday would be, you know, a well-received prize.
Right, yeah.
So, and when it comes to... choosing your fundraising target, it usually has to be your prize value has to be 20% of your fundraising target.
Right.
In most instances, so you have to factor that in.
Yeah.
And obviously the best way, the most profitable way, is trying to get donated prizes. You know, having to buy the prizes is really going to erode your profit.
Profitability, right. Yeah, and that's a really good point. But I think the point that you raised too about the suitability of the prize is a massive one, because, you know, if your membership is predominantly male and you sell a day to a beauty spa or something like that, then
you could do a day at the beauty spa, and
that's the kind of presents. That's where I, you know, stuff up with my wife. It's always buying the wrong present. So same principle applies here with the raffle ticket prizes, to make them suitable and interesting to your club, I suppose. And look, it's a fantastic product that you've put together, and there's a little bit of research, but I'm sure that if clubs contacted you via the website, that you'd be able to answer all their concerns or queries.
Sure.
And I think it's a fantastic way for clubs to run their raffles. And I think there'd be a lot of clubs out there that'd be crazy not to check it out at www.rafflelink.com.au. If I could just ask you, Belinda, separately to the actual product, from a development perspective, how tough was it? So you've come up with this idea, because I'm sure a lot of people out there would like to know, you come up with this great idea, how tough was it to get it off the ground?
It was very long-winded. Essentially, I was operating another business at the time, so I was doing my day job, and then I was coming home of the evening and researching. The idea took a year and a half to actually get into production phase and get the software developed, and that was very long-winded. We were amending it quite substantially as we were going along.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, so...
But you got there in the end, and what's the initial uptake like? Have you've found a little bit of an audience, or you're just in that initial growth phase? How are you going?
Yeah, look, we've been contacted by a great variety of people, some charities. I was contacted the other week by somebody looking to fundraise for a hospital. We're currently running a raffle for a horse rescue group. We have another raffle that's a student body of a university in South Australia. So it's many and varied. There are a lot of people out there that need help, and now it's quite accessible. So,
yeah, absolutely. So we here at Sports Community encourage any club out there that's thinking about running a raffle to check you out at www.rafflelink.com.au. Belinda Watson is the name, and she's the director of Raffle Link. Belinda, it's been an absolute pleasure to have you on our show today.
Great, thank you.
And we've loved listening to you and learning about Raffle Link. And hopefully the clubs out there utilise it and you become a very wealthy woman.
That's not the goal.
No, I'm sure it's not. I'm sure it's to help all the different clubs and not-for-profits and different organisations out there just to run a better raffle system.
Mm.
All right, thanks for being on the show, Belinda.
Great, thank you so much.
You're listening to Sports Community Radio with your hosts, Jonah Vella and Steve Pallas. If you've missed a couple of our episodes, why not visit our website at www.sportscommunity.com.au, and there you'll find all our previous podcasts that you can download. And while you're there, give us a review so you can help spread the news about Sports Community and its services to the grassroots sports clubs. Time has come again for that wonderful segment that we have as part of our show. It's called The Top Nine, and today's Top Nine is all about ways to ensure the running of an effective event planning meeting. But Steve, who is the MD of sportscommunity.com.au, as well as being one of the hosts on the show, has also been through this process recently. And one of the really important factors before we launch into this top nine is actually selecting the right people to be on that planning committee.
It is, Joe, and it's probably selecting the organising committee is probably the most important task and the thing that's going to separate success and failure for your event. Ideally what we need to do is think about the different skills that we need and the decisions that we need to make to put on the event and then recruit accordingly the people with those skills. So what it means is not everyone needs to be on the organising event. Or the event organising committee. Right? Just because you want to be heavily involved in it doesn't mean to say that you need to be on the committee.
You're the right person for the committee, yeah.
That's really important because for want of better terminology, the committee is for making decisions and controls and really setting up what is going to be done. It's not the doing part of putting the event together. So a lot of the people that are your traditional club workers, you know, often they prefer not to be involved in the committee and just be you know, given their responsibilities. So before we kind of talk about how we make our committees more effective, it's really important to think about the different skills and to recruit those skill sets accordingly.
Absolutely spot on, 100%. Otherwise, you're setting yourself up for failure. So the number one in the top nine, and this is by no means in order of importance, is to appoint a chairperson. So number one in the top nine ways to ensure the running of an effective event planning meeting is to appoint a chairperson. And that chairperson could rotate each meeting. It's the person who's responsible for ensuring the meeting sticks to its agenda and doesn't divert into noble causes or rabbit holes. I might take a second to explore this notion of noble causes. So what do we mean by noble causes, Steve?
Yeah,
because often you're telling me not to do it. So
yeah, a noble cause is something that is really important, or it is perceived to be really important, but it actually doesn't help you achieve the goal that you set. So very often one of the major frustrations of meetings is that we drift off the point, and then the meeting finishes and we haven't actually achieved the goal of the meeting. It takes a really good chairperson will look at it and say, well, is this discussion going the way, is this discussion helping us achieve the goal of the meeting, or should we just park this topic and discuss it in another place at another time, which is more suitable to us achieving the goals of what we're trying to achieve out of this meeting?
So talk to me about the strategies for a chairperson. I'm sure that everybody out there's been in meetings that have run off the rails. Now, as a chairperson, I've also seen a lot of people that just become the biggest dictator on the planet, and just to try and get it back on track. Is there? And you've done a lot of chairing. You've been in lots and lots of meetings. Just some of the little tricks that chairpersons could use just to bring. I mean, you touched on one just before, which is to bring it all back into line. But you don't have to be to get angry or emotional or anything like that to bring the meeting back to the agenda items, do you?
No, that's right. And I guess effective committees and effective meetings run on a set of rules. And they run on a very much a respect basis. Now, whether that is we're going to raise a topic and everybody's going to have their say one at a time, or whether it is that just certain people with that something to say on that topic, which is my preference. I don't think that there's a need for everyone to have a comment on every single topic. But a skilled chairperson will draw the information out of people that often don't talk. And they'll create space in the meeting for those people to, yes, to have their say. Because someone talks a lot or talks loudly doesn't mean to say they're right, or that's the best option, or that they've considered everything fully. So a good chairperson, not only do they keep the meeting on track, but what they're doing is they're engaging and making sure that the best options and the best answers come out. And so potentially there's lots of techniques and, you know, brainstorming, where you just everyone puts their idea around the table. Everyone puts an idea up, no comment, no criticism, no comment, no judgment. Just bang, bang, bang until there's no more ideas, and then you start to work through them, or you kind of come up different ways of people being able to have their say. But that's the role of the chairperson.
Let me throw this at you. Someone in the meeting is for whatever reason they've hijacked the meeting and they're off on their own tangent, pushing their own barrow. What do you advise a chairperson to do in that situation?
Well, I guess it comes down to how prepared the meeting is. So if there's clearly defined objectives, and effectively they are normally listed in an agenda for the meeting, then it's very easy then for the chairman to say, hey,
let's stick to the...
This is a really interesting topic.
So you're taking the emotion out of it.
This is a really interesting topic, yep. but does everyone agree that this is probably better suited? This is not helping us achieve this, this, and this. We can handle... We'll find another time for this. You don't even need to work out when you're going to do it. You just know that now's not the time. And does everybody agree? That question, does everybody agree? Then kind of takes that personality, even though it's the role of the chair to guide and structure the meeting, it takes that personality away from it, because effectively it's almost an informal vote without having an informal vote.
And so, I think that's really key for a lot of sports clubs out there. That point that you've raised there is really, really key. When you're getting these events, meetings happening, and you're pointing a chairperson, make sure that your agenda items are pretty clear, and that does take the emotion out of it. Now, number two, Steve, is to ensure that the meeting dates are set well in advance.
Yeah, absolutely. Particularly if you know the date of the event that you're organising, it's relatively easy then to schedule all the meetings at once. They may need to change, but by scheduling them all at once, it gives people a chance to put them in their diaries and make sure that the organising committee is properly represented at the meetings.
So for example, with the fundraising event for David Sands, You guys got organised relatively early in the piece.
We did. It was a 6 month lead in.
Yep.
5 or 6 month lead in, and we eventually scheduled all our meetings at the one time, which was really handy because we're all very busy people. So that was really cool. And I guess point number three, one of the key things that we did out of the David Sands, and if you want to hear more about that, the David Sands fundraising event that we're involved in, Joe, that raised over $100,000 in one weekend, podcast number two, think is where we go into depth into that event. But yeah, setting the agenda, what is it that we're wanting to achieve from the meeting?
Really important.
Yeah, and look, one of the key things with setting agendas is don't jam them too full of things to do. Like point number five, we'll just bring it up a little bit. A key skill of good meetings is to think, do, think. So we often fall into the trap as volunteers that we feel like we've got to be doing, but the role of an organising committee is to actually think and plan. So there's some things that you don't do justice just by flying through an agenda item.
And that's a really tough thing even for me, thinking about it now as you speak about it. I've been involved in so many meetings where the inclination is, let's just get stuff done.
Done. No, that's right. But the skill is to actually get the best outcome. So look, just say the agenda or the key thing for that meeting is to define the event. You know, that's where you're fantastic use of a whiteboard, and it literally could take a couple of hours to come up with that, to get the best use of the networks that you've got, the resources that you've got access to, and the audience that you're trying to reach to maximize the money for the club. So but if that's the case, then you can't jam that agenda full of other things that are going to take a lot of time as well. You have to kind of push those off to another meeting or another time, because otherwise it's just too big, it's too daunting, and it becomes ineffectual. But really, one big ticket item to unload and unpack and work through is a fantastic way. As you kind of the meetings obviously change when you're kind of starting at the start and you're conceptualizing an event, and then as you're going towards closer to the event day, then it's more ticking off the boxes to see that things are done, who needs some help,
right,
and those sorts of things. So it will change. But that concept of think, do, think is really, really important. Think about what we're doing, do something, and then assess what we did. Was that the right thing? Can we do it better? Is there a quicker way? Do we need more help? Do we need more people? Do we need more skills? Do we need more people involved? Let's review and adjust and quickly change. And that's the role of the organising committee, is to be the brains of the event, not the muscle.
Right. And that's a really important distinction. The next one that we want to talk about is to ensure that the minutes are, and more importantly, the action points are recorded. And I couldn't think of a more important point to raise than this one. And it's one that was drummed through me when I was going through my corporation days and attending lots of meetings. I'm sure that's the same for Steve. And the reason is that if you're recording the action points, then you're taking the emotion out of follow-up meetings if somebody contests them or becomes defensive about them or anything along those lines, because you can just go back to your minutes and say, well, look, this is what we recorded it on this date. You accepted that you were going to take responsibility for this action and you move on.
Yeah, and it probably even more importantly than that, it creates a record of who's doing what. And even the smallest events, it's almost impossible to run it. Well, no, it is impossible to run even a small event in your head.
Yep.
You know, you have to write down the things that you're doing, what you're doing, who's doing it, who's responsible, that sort of thing. And so the minutes clearly define and serve as a reminder. And it's amazing how much work, when you've got minutes, it's amazing how much work gets done the day before the next meeting, because people go about their busy lives and then they know, oh, they look at the minutes from the previous meeting and they go, oh, I'm supposed to do this, 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 and this. So one of my favourite sayings from my corporate world is, my corporate time, is you get what you measure.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you've written it down and then you're going to monitor it at the next meeting, then you're a lot higher chance of getting successful completion of that task. So taking the time to document your the action points, who's doing what and when is it due, is really, really, really critical.
Absolutely. Point number six is to ensure individuals within the committee have strong understanding of the skills and strengths of each individual on their committee. And this point is all about, even if you've known your fellow committee members for a long time, it's still really valuable to introduce themselves when you have your first meeting and the skills that they bring to the table. And one of the reasons I think this is really important is because the team members feel valued and respected. But secondly, also, it stops or it helps alleviate that problem where one person tries to do too many things or feels that they need to do too many things because their understanding is that if I don't do it, well, then other people aren't going to do it. But if you bring up the skills in your meeting, then everybody in there is going to get a good idea of what other people can do.
So, oh, absolutely.
And I think that's really important.
Oh, even if we've known people for many years, we often don't really understand what their skill set actually is. And so that's a really powerful way of just getting the most out of your organizing committee is to just work out who's got access. And not just their skills and their knowledge, but also their network, Joe.
Absolutely.
It's being able to... Who can you get to?
And this was really key in your David Sands work on your committee, wasn't it? The ability not only to understand... I've heard you talk about this many times. It's a really critical success factor that you not only understood the strengths of the people that were on that event organising committee, but the networks that they brought to the table as well.
Yeah, that's right. And again, we drew on a lot of people helped that drew on their networks that just weren't part of the organizing committee. So it's, again, it's not just the networks of the people on the organizing committee, but it's the networks of the whole event itself. Who can we use to help us? And I mean the word use positively, not take advantage of, to help us to maximize the success and profit of this fundraising event. So yeah, it's really interesting when to listen to people's story and to see hear what they actually can do, just not what you think they can do.
Absolutely. Point number seven on our top nine ways to ensure the running of an effective event planning meeting is it is important that you get input from all members of your committee. Now, we touched on this earlier on in our discussion, but there definitely is different personalities that come together, and some can be dominant, some can be loud, and some can be shy. And like you said, a really skilled chairperson can draw out their opinions and what they can bring to that meeting.
That discussion.
And that discussion, rather than have them just sit back. And they will. People will sit back and say nothing.
Yeah, and that's not because, often it's not because they've got nothing to say. It's just because they don't get the opportunity. And it's really important that everyone gets their input in there, because everyone comes from things from a different perspective. That's why we've recruited you onto the organising committee, because you come at things from differently from me. I come at it differently from you. A tradie will come at it differently from a professional office worker. And all those perspectives are really, really important to get. And it's very rare in any meeting that the one person says something and it's 100% correct. Absolutely. Or the end result. I mean, that's just the starting point for the discussions, and we mold it and we gel and we get the input and get all the different people's thoughts and opinions, and we normally create something tremendously bigger.
Absolutely.
And it's kind of like using the same theory that we use in the training. We say all the time in the training sessions that the room is smarter than the presenter. The group knowledge of the room is smarter than any one individual. So same applies in meetings, that the group knowledge of the organising committee, in this case, is always smarter, is always greater than the thoughts of one vocal minority.
And in my case, Steve, that rings true even if there's only one person in the audience. Number eight, agreement on how meetings will run. So this is a really key point too. Some clubs will set up some ground rules, which we strongly advise as to how to run the meetings, and that is made public, so everyone in the membership body knows about it. And it might be simple things like don't talk over one another.
Yeah, and if you've got something to say, do you talk through the chair or do you not talk through the chair? What's the process? Because then, as you said before, if you're following a process that everyone agrees, then it's a lot harder for the meeting to be hijacked as people disagree and things may or may not get emotional. So if you've got the rule that no one talks over the other person. If we're doing brainstorming, no one comments on the topics that are being put up on the board until the end. We take all the personality out of it. For every major topic that we do actually literally go around the table. One person says one topic or gives one answer, then we go to the next person and we keep going around the room until there's nothing more to say on that topic. And that's a brainstorming technique as well. So it's worth taking the time to say, rightio, in this meeting, this is how we're going to, well, you've got something to say. You know, back in the old primary school days, we used to stick our hand up, and that's how the teacher chose who's going to talk. Well, I'm not saying we go to that level, but it's really important that we do know when we can talk and when we can't talk.
And I strongly advise, and I know that a lot of clubs will probably just do it like they organise their meetings and they don't set any ground rules because people have been there for 10 or 15 years and they all know each other and they think it's all going to go smoothly. That will be the quickest way for it to bite you on the bum. So make sure that you get these ground rules sorted out because they're very, 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 very useful when running meetings. Now, last but not least is to have a process that allows for the best decisions to be made.
Yeah, and again, this is part of the meeting rules, is how are you going to make decisions as a group, as a subcommittee, right? Is it going to be have a vote and majority rules? Or ideally, are we going to keep going and going and going and going on the topic until we get consensus? Now, consensus is obviously... Well, not obviously. Consensus is the best result because if everyone agrees on the outcome, then everyone's going to buy into the outcome. Everyone's going to be contributing towards the outcome, whereas if you don't believe in something is the right outcome, you're going to be less inclined, even if it's subconsciously, to contribute to that. And when you're then, you know, you leave the organizing committee and you're going to be asking someone for help, it's a lot harder for you to ask for help or ask for money or ask for sponsors when you don't truly believe in what you've agreed on. So by far and away, the most powerful decision-making process is to get consensus, group agreement. But in some instances, that just isn't possible because there's just diametrically opposed. And so that's where the chair, the rules need to come in and the decision-making, how are we going to make a decision in this situation? Better to set that at front than have to deal with it when you're right in the middle of an emotional decision.
Okay, top 9 ways to ensure the running of an effective event planning meeting. Number 1, appoint a chairperson. Number 2, ensure that meeting dates are set well in advance. Number 3, ensure that someone is responsible for setting the agenda. Number 4, ensure the minutes are more importantly, the action points are recorded. Number 5 is think. Number 6 is ensure individuals within the committee have a strong understanding of the skills and strengths of each individual on their committee. Number 7, it is important that you get input from all members on your committee. Number 8, agreement how the meetings will be run. Number 9, have a process that allows for the best decisions to be made. And a very big thank you to Jen Rose for putting together that fantastic top 9 for us today. Thanks for joining us today. We hope you've enjoyed the podcast. If you've just tuned in and like what you've heard, and you want to catch up with previous episodes or replay this one, then visit our podcast page at www.sportscommunity.com.au, where you can find all our previous episodes for download as well as show notes. And while you're there, subscribe to our newsletter for the latest and greatest in grassroots sports news. You can also find us on iTunes and Stitcher Radio. But don't just listen to the episode. Why not subscribe to our podcast feed so you get automatically updated when a new podcast is available? And give us a review so we can improve what we do. So on behalf of me, Joe Novella,
and me, Steve Pellis, thank you for making us part of your sports community.